a grant that's helping people avoid deadly diseases in abroad. That could have a big impact, but the size of these cuts is not something that's going to make any kind of impact on the deficit, at least at this point.
And Musk has attacked it?
Musk has attacked it, essentially saying that we were claiming he's not cutting enough. That's not what we're saying. But yes, I don't think he appreciates people taking a close look at his claims. But I think that's important. The website he set up really doesn't provide the enough transparency. And so we've set up this this Musk Watch Doge tracker to try to really drill down. You can look at each individual cut. You can look at it by state. You can look at it by congressional district. You can see exactly how much in each grant that he is overstating the savings. So it's all right there for people to learn for themselves.
And we just have 5 seconds, but do you think they're attacking Social Security to privatize it?
I don't know exactly what the end goal here is, but I think they're, when you're looking at trying to get $1 trillion in savings, you've got to look at programs like Social Security, and so that's why there is an attack on it, which is what this new system is.
Judd Legum, founder of Popular Information and MuskWatch. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 special programming campaign. Check out all the great programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Rockets. Indeed, America. Oh, what America do we live in? This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Rowland, and we are going to be talking about what could an effective resistance to a fascist dictatorship look like. There, mull on that for a little bit. I thought the guest on Democracy Now! just on air here on KBOO Community Radio. The guy said it straight up like it is. We are not waiting for a constitutional crisis. We are not waiting for a fascist dictatorship. They have arrived, folks. What are we going to do about it? I got no great answers. Maybe somebody out there does. So anyway, to talk about it with me and to talk about some thoughts that he has about some especially actions that are going on around at Tesla car dealerships that have been snowballing around the world and helping send Tesla stock prices down, which who knows what sort of effect that might even have on our man Elon. But so I'm going to bring up in a little bit Patrick Mazza, a one-time colleague of mine on the Great Alliance newspaper here in Portland, had been a longtime climate activist and a writer in various forms. Now he's a blogger with his Substack platform called The Raven. And so good morning, Patrick. Good to have you on.
Hi, Paul. Good to hear you. Good to be here.
Not so great circumstances. You know, usually we're talking about the dire climate catastrophe. I wish I could get back to talking about that, but unfortunately, we have seemingly even more immediate crises on our hands.
Yeah, indeed. But we've been going down this road for a long time. I mean, you know, the trend toward. By the way, how is my sound coming through there?
It sounds good.
Oh, good. You know, the trend toward fascism in the United States is nothing new. I mean, in 1980, Bertram Gross wrote a book, Friendly Fascism, and the U.S. Integrated a lot of the old Nazis into its scientific and intelligence structures at the end of World War II. A lot of the old Nazi generals and high officers made it to the high ranks of NATO. Joseph Goebbels said another name for fascism is corporatism, and we've had increasingly corporation-dominated politics for many years. So, you know, Trump and what we're seeing is kind of the latest iteration, maybe the culmination of all of this.
It's an acceleration, I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely an acceleration, and there are people in his camp, the techno-fascists like Peter Thiel, who don't believe, who are outright saying we're done with democracy, it's not compatible with capitalism, and would like something like a capitalist monarchy, a capitalist dictatorship to run the United States like a corporation, and most every corporation is in fact an autocracy or a dictatorship. So here we are, the corporate state is with us, and at least it's visible. At least we see it. We can't be asleep anymore, and all we can hope for is that this is waking people up. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that, and I guess I've thought that in the past, but when it's right here, sitting in front of you. You do worry whether, how accelerated it might get, and
right.
And how that might actually forestall the kind of resistance that needs to be developed. So when I turn to your piece that you just put out, I just brought it up, called Stung by People Power Protests, Elon Musk Targets My Group and a Close Friend. Standing up with courage in the face of fear about, as I said earlier, some of these protests against Tesla dealerships that are snowballing around the country and the world. But I just kind of want to throw out, just to sort of frame the conversation that I was hoping to have, in addition to the, you know, just more direct actions that can be taken by people if they should so desire, is the, you know, the idea of a united front. And I'll just put it out. The only thing that I can see that could be really potentially effective would be actually organizations that don't generally work together, maybe never work together, people that don't generally work together, different movements, different tendencies, different identities, to actually form some kind of united front, whether, you know, formally, informally, and actually put themselves out there. I have doubts that even in the face of fascist dictatorship, that people will be able to put behind their differences and their perhaps ideological blinders, etc. But anyway, I just want to put out there, I also want to mention that a colleague of yours that I think you may have mentioned in your column, Valerie, will be calling in a few minutes to talk about the Troublemakers group. So yeah, talk about what's been going on in Seattle.
So, you know, a few months ago, we formed a new group, a new direct action-oriented group called the Troublemakers. You know, we're oriented to climate. We've had both forest actions. I was in one of them where we did a good old Earth First thing and tore out boundary markers on a timber sale and got it postponed. And then demonstrations at Amazon for its continued expansion of fossil fuel use. Anyway, Troublemakers has been one of the groups organizing protests against Tesla dealerships in the Seattle area. Our people have been, you know, along with other groups such as Democratic Socialists of America, we've been out there regularly at Tesla dealerships, and this is one of their big markets here in Seattle. You know, the techies like Teslas. And one of the things the group did was put up a Tesla takedown website, you know, one of these sites where you can go and post on a map what's coming up. And this got us targeted by Elon Musk. A week ago, Saturday, Musk took to X and named a number of groups, including the Troublemakers, who are organizing protests, falsely claiming we're funded by Act Blue. We're not funded by anyone except a few individual donors. We've got about 3,000 in the bank account. And then the next day, he personally attacked a friend of mine and a co-organizer of the Troublemakers, Valerie Costa, who I've worked with for many years. He said Costa is committing crimes, which she's not. She's just another organizer in these peaceful protests. Sure, there's been some vandalism, but we're strictly nonviolent. We don't endorse that. So she's been just, you know, she'll talk more about this, but she's been trolled relentlessly. I mean, just online, you know, but she's not backing down. So she's been on Democracy Now. She's been on NPR. She had a piece in the Guardian, which I extensively quote in my piece at The Raven. That's theraven.substack.com. It's gotten my piece has gotten an incredible number of likes and restacks on the Substack app. So this is just an example of the, you know, the richest man in the world just engaged in his usual bullying, autocratic, lying manner. I mean, Musk plays fast and loose with the facts all the time. I mean, you know, how do you know when Elon Musk is lying? You know, you can make the old joke. He's doing this because he's being stung. His stock, you know, elevated to like 480 a share after the election. Everybody thought, oh, Elon's in. Now it's down under 240. It's projected by JP Morgan to go down to 120. Sales are way down. I think projected for this quarter is 320,000, down from 495,000 in the last quarter of 2024. So he's stung. So I think this is one of the points you want to reach when you're talking about resistance is where's the center of gravity? You know, when you're going after an opponent, you go for the center of gravity. You go for where they live, where their power is, and where they can be thrown off. And obviously, Elon Musk's center of gravity is his wealth, and the center of his wealth is the vastly overvalued Tesla stock. It's been said that if it goes down to a certain level, his leveraging to buy X, Twitter, will collapse. So he is threatened where he lives, and so he's running out.
My only fear with that, and I don't know, these strange thoughts just stray into my mind. My only fear is that if he starts losing on his personal finances, he'll be that much more motivated to suck up off the, you know, to just suck off the federal treasury and the data that it contains. I guess we'll see about that. But looks like we do have a Valerie up. Are you with us, Valerie?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you on. I'm actually just getting up to speed on what you've been up to as we speak. This kind of came together at the last minute. I was reading some of what you said in that you were quoted in Patrick's column. So maybe before we get going, just tell a little bit about how you got to be involved in what you're doing over the years.
Over the years.
Just a brief synopsis, kind of, you know, you're coming.
I've been a lifelong social justice activist of some kind. I started in Amnesty International as a high school student, and I've been involved in the global justice movement, economic justice, workers' rights, and have moved to climate and climate justice, environmental justice for the last decade or so. And that's how I met Patrick and our organizing around with 350 Seattle and now in Troublemakers, which is a newer group based out of Western Washington State, where we essentially build community to take action around climate justice. And since the election, especially since the inauguration, we've really shifted toward broader sort of democracy defense, anti-fascist, anti-authoritarian organizing.
And I want to get into that a little bit, because the question I posed at the outset, what would an effective resistance against a fascist dictatorship actually look like? And I kind of put out this idea of a united front of all the people working on, you know, social justice, environmental justice, progressive, whatever, all the various issues that we're involved in. But since we're talking about you and Patrick in Seattle and Elon Musk and the Tesla dealerships that are being targeted by protests all around the world, and you being now targeted yourself, what does it feel like to be in the crosshairs of someone like Elon Musk?
That was terrifying. It was totally terrifying when I saw the tweet. So this whole thing for me personally started a little over a week ago when Elon Musk tweeted that Costa is committing crimes, Costa being my last name, he retweeted another tweet with all sorts of false information in it. And since then, I've just been, I mean, I've been dealing with it, like, on a personal level, trying to, like, keep myself as safe as possible, trying to, you know, limit my online presence. Because I immediately started getting, you know, threatening emails and, you know, was getting tagged on X, I mean, constantly with all sorts of wild theories about who I am and, you know, where I get my money, and how people were, you know, tagging Kash Patel and Pam Bondi, asking them to investigate me. And, you know, so it was like a deeply personal attack. And then, of course, like the attack on the movement as a whole last week, the Tesla takedown movement, where you see the administration, Trump, Pam Bondi, in particular Musk, all kind of conflating the, you know, vandalism with the peaceful protests around the world. I mean, there have been, like, I think over 300 protests that we know of that have been marked through this, like, TeslaTakedown.com website, but I'm sure there have been many more than that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other dimension, which is intricately related, is this threat, which, you know, I'm not actually even sure of the status of the bill where, you know, nonprofit groups tagged with supporting terrorism, which, of course, now becomes so broad as to be impossible to tell who would be considered that or not. But having their nonprofit status taken away, and of course many activist groups and individuals operate under a nonprofit banner. KBOO operates as a nonprofit. Almost all the alternative media platforms operate under a nonprofit. So that's another threat that probably people are feeling. What are you thinking about that? Or Patrick?
Yeah, I think it's part of this strategy to, you know, just put us all into a state of chaos, right? Like, we have to kind of take care of our own personal needs, right? There's the doxing and the sort of the personal threats. There's also just sort of the threats of survival. Well, I was going to say the challenges of survival right now for many individuals, just with the economy as bad as it is. And, you know, with talks about cutting Social Security and really just like practical survival things. And then now these attacks on nonprofits and the institutions that people, you know, who tend to be more left of center tend to use, right? Like, there's no, you know, looking at, well, what are the, you know, right-wing institutions or organizations using? They're all using similar systems, right, and similar tactics, right? We're not talking about the terrorism and violence inflicted by the right, but, like, you know, I think if we were to, you know, look at that, we find that there's actually quite a bit more lawlessness. I mean, there's a lot of lawlessness on the side of the right, and especially the far right, which is this aligned with the, you know, the Nazis and fascists. I mean, we're talking about violence and talking about, you know, dangerous political formations. I mean, that's really the right, not the left. But
we'll bring Patrick back into this. Thoughts?
Oh. Yeah, you know, Troublemakers, by the way, is not even a nonprofit group. I mean, we're
good.
You know, but I agree that, you know, they are, you know, they're trying to, you know, they are trying to just, you know, terrorize people. And, you know, a story in the New York Times today about them targeting a lot of, you know, Democratic Party oriented groups like ACT Blue. You know, I think we can expect, you know, some revival of the COINTELPRO type activities of internal infiltration and a purpose of disruption. You know, so I think we're into a serious time when it is, you know, for people who engage in resistance, it is a higher risk level. I mean, in, you know, in Britain already, there, you know, it's mm-hmm. gone more fascist, where, you know, there are people who've done, you know, climate actions who are now doing years-long sentences in prison. So we, you know, yeah, so it's more, you know, it gets closer to what activists in other countries have had to endure, you know.
So, yeah.
You know, Latin American activists have, you know, risked their lives, and you know, many of them have been killed. So we don't know, you know, what the limits of these people are, but, you know, we've got to, you know, we've got to just proceed with courage.
Indeed.
And, you know, not even, you know, whether, you know, not even whether we know we'll win or not, but, you know, it's just kind of a basic of remaining to be a human being, you know, to stand up against obvious evil.
Let me just remind people that you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio with your weekly host, Paul Roland. I have on the phone from Seattle both Patrick Mazza and Valerie Costa, who have been involved with this new group called Troublemakers, which has been targeting has been protesting at Tesla dictatorships. Not involved with the acts of vandalism, of some of which have been very intense, I must say. Right around here, around Portland, there's been actually shootings at Tesla dealerships, and of course, we certainly don't encourage that kind of activity. That's dangerous for yourself and others. Anyway, just I guess Portland often has some more heightened type of responses to things. I have no idea who the individuals; they haven't been caught yet. But the predominant form of protest has been people picketing outside Tesla dealerships, which itself has, as Valerie mentioned, has caused Tesla stock to go down, and probably along with these high-profile film and other music figures who are getting rid of their Teslas, etc. So the number to call is 503-231-8187 to join this conversation. Looks like we got somebody already. I do want to remind people that we are in our spring drive, and we are asking for your support to keep this vital community resource, this vital organ of information in a time of total chaos and insanity, and cowardice on the part of the, generally speaking, of the mass media. Please go to kboo.fm and check out our special programming during this time, and please consider donating to the station. On the click on the donate button up upper right hand side. Let's see. So let's just talk before people start calling in and moving the conversation wherever it goes. So Valerie, I opened this conversation about this idea of a united front against fascism. You talked about, you know, anti-fascist organizing going on. I assume you've probably thought about this sort of thing. Have you, what sort of conversations might there be going on about people actually trying to forge tighter bonds between people who haven't worked together? I mean, you have a great blueprint for it with the anti-WTO organizing in the late 90s, where all sorts of different organizations came together.
Mm-hmm. I think we're just beginning to see the beginnings of that. Like, from where I stand, the first... Well, has it even been a month? I guess the first month after the inauguration, it felt like there was sort of like a calm, and people were waiting to see what was going to happen, and organizations weren't particularly, you know, it didn't seem like they were kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. And now it feels like there's this, you know, surging of energy. You know, we're seeing like in Seattle, we've been holding these federal building Fridays, protests, or essentially like rallies in support of federal workers, and new organizations are joining that coalition every week, and more people keep turning out, organizing and collaborating across cross movement spaces around that. And the Tesla takedown movement is bringing in people from, you know, all, I would say, more individuals. There's been less organizations. I think one of the challenges right now is that organizations especially organizations with C3 status, are under threat. Like, their livelihoods are at stake right now, and so it's become so much riskier to speak up and put yourself out there in political opposition right now because of the threat of losing C3 status or having your debanked and having your bank account frozen. So it's not that organizations aren't speaking up. There are lots that are seeing it a lot in the, say, immigrant rights and civil rights spaces. But I think there's also, like, a cautiousness that I haven't seen in the, you know, like, 20, 25 years that I've been doing doing organizing. So
they're succeeding.
I'm not sure. I think maybe just the, like, getting our ducks in a row, getting, like, our, you know, our house in shape, right? Like, having better internal security, internal systems, to making sure we're clear on, like, what we're saying to the press, how we're speaking about things. It's just the stakes are so much higher right now, mm-hmm. to people as individuals and to the organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what the fear certainly was when this stuff started, mm-hmm. coming out in the past couple months. And it's, but, you know, I've said this probably too many times on the air, but, you know, what one wonders, you know, about talking openly about these things, not, you know, fear of repercussions. I mean, you know, I can't, you know, obviously there's certain things I can't say on the air. Obviously, I got to be careful, but, you know, doing what I'm doing, I can't not talk about what's going on. And so I have to use the language that to me describes what's going on the best. And that's the only, but at the same time, you know, the fear of turning people off, of scaring people further, you know, so it's this, uh-huh. It's just this weird thing. But again, you do have to identify what's going on. So that's, like, seems to be the key thing, which is, I guess, what we're doing. Anyway, we do have, before we get Patrick's reflections on those things, let's get our caller who didn't give their name. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Mitch, and I just wanted to alert Patrick Mazza, who noted that he has a Substack page, and I'm a big fan of Substack, but just yesterday I found out how easy, apparently, it is for people who are trying to misrepresent themselves for whatever mischievous reason to spoof Substack's site and send stuff out under other people's names, making it look like someone could be up to mischief against you. Now, in my case, it's not that anyone was spoofing a Substack page to make me look bad. It was they managed to spoof the senator from California, Adam Schiff's page, so well that they a comment I made on Substack generated something from Senator Schiff's office saying that he liked my comment. And you can go to Senator Schiff's own Substack page and see what he likes and what he doesn't like, and clearly it was a misrepresentation, because, you know, I thought it was strange that Senator Schiff, since I haven't been a California constituent since 2005, that's when I moved up to Oregon, that a California senator would for any reason be contacting someone who isn't a constituent to just commend them.
Yeah, this is, the tools of manipulation, disinformation, and propaganda have gotten so more sophisticated, so much more widespread, and in the hands of very bad actors that,
I just wanted to alert that it might not be someone who is doing anything by spoofing one of these big social media sites like Substack. It might not look like someone is trolling you, but even if they can't be verified with who the level of misrepresentation can cause a lot of chaos out there.
Okay, well, thanks for flagging that, Mitch.
Yeah,
and thank you.
Thanks for alerting me to that. Yeah. You know, just one more thing, yeah.
Well, go ahead, Patrick, maybe pick up on what Valerie was responding to my questions.
Yeah, I mean, the real need now is solidarity. We need to find places to build solidarity among each other, and that's going to become more crucial. I mean, my feeling is that we've been heading for a while into a deep national crisis. Maybe on the order of a civil war kind of level, maybe not the shooting civil war, but I think we're into a time of breakdown where stuff we've relied on is going to break down. I mean, I'm on Social Security. Why am I going to keep getting my check? That kind of thing. And so we're going to need more just creation of networks of mutual aid and support. And so much of that is on a local and community basis. And I think that, I make the theme of my Raven Substack, Building the Future in Place, I'm a long-term bioregionalist as you are, Paul, and I mean, we've been at this forever. And I really think we need to build institutions of local and community from neighborhoods and cities and watersheds and bioregions up, and not stop there, of course, but be networked and draw together as many people as we can. I think the whole idea of creating community assemblies is really important. Working on looking at what's going on around the world with municipalism.
I don't know if you've heard about this group Worth Fighting For, St. John's, here in Portland. They were on another talk show a few weeks ago, and then I followed up by just opening up my phone lines the next day to talking about that. It's a group of just a few people who knew each other, friends, acquaintances in the St. John neighborhood of North Portland. And they just started talking about, what do we do? So they just started meeting, and now it's got a whole bunch of people. They've got committees. They're like giving immigrants rides to places so they don't, because they're afraid to go out in public and go to their doctor's appointments and stuff. It's just got all these basic kind of mutual aid things, but I'm sure there's like a political education component. Anyway, it's very inspiring to me because they sounded just very grounded and very very grassroots. It's a very totally horizontal. Anyway, hoping to see more. It's exactly what you're talking about. More things like that spring up and gain more traction. Anyway, go ahead.
I've been talking a lot at my Substack about building alternative community economic institutions, public banking, social housing. I wrote my previous post about a successful social housing initiative here, voted on by the people in Seattle. Local food networks, worker co-ops. What's really transformative? We're kind of in a situation here where we're in a defensive mode where there's these vital institutions of national government, as vital as getting reliable weather reports and keeping postal service going, where we're in a defensive mode where we need to defend, but we also need to look at how we can set the agenda, and reclaim a leadership. And, one thing we're kind of stuck with is what about the Democratic Party? and it's it's seeming relative weakness to deal with what's going on, and how, you know, I mean, we've, you know, had a long, you know, kind of convoluted relationship with the party, and it's, you know, and it's suppression of third party activities, which, you know, try, you know, which have made it very difficult to organize an alternative. You know, I'm just throwing out thoughts here. And
well, we got another caller, so let's okay. Let's go right to Ella and then carry on the conversation. Go ahead, Ella, you're on the air.
Good morning. What a very interesting subject. And my name is Miss Ella Jen, and I'm named after the woman who taught Martin Luther King Jr. in her civil rights classes. I heard some interesting words this morning about Donald Trump, acceleration and culmination. And I'm an eco-theologist and eschatologist, and I study the prophets. The man in the White House right now, we have been warned about him for thousands of years. He's been referred to as the lawless one. And all of us who heard Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! This morning know that Donald Trump has broken every law that's written in the books all the way up to the 1700s, and we can expect to see more. So Donald Trump has been referred to by the prophets as the lawless one, the man of sin, the son of perdition. And the prophets also say that he, when this man comes, as the culmination of all of the dictators and fascist rulers of the past, he will do what they have done plus.
Well, would, do the prophets have anything to say about how to respond to him?
Well, I think your guest has, both the man and the woman have done a good job of telling us about some of the things that we need to do. And actually, I think that we've actually waited too long to do
I'll say
things.
That.
Yes. And, you know, you have another person I've heard talk on your show called Santiago.
Uh-huh.
I've been listening to him now for a few months. I just moved to Portland last year. So we need to accelerate the community building to be able to fight back and to stand up against the relentless assaults that are going to be coming, and they will intensify, because the prophets started 2,000 years ago to warn us that this man was coming, Donald Trump. He's of his bloodline is from the Roman Caesars. He's descended from them, so it's in his blood to be a dictator and to be a leader.
I'm not sure about all that, but...
I'm sorry?
Well, I'm not sure about all that, but...
Well, I've studied them, and so, you know, I've been studying for 40 years, and you already see what he's done, so even if you're not sure about it, you will be made sure of it by his coming actions, because they will be... beyond fascism, beyond dictatorship.
Well, we'll see.
I'm sorry?
I said, well, yeah, we'll see what's going to happen. And I think the most important thing, as you said and our guests say, is to keep focused on our response to whatever is and whatever will be. So,
well, that's true. But we also have to understand, Donald Trump is mentioned in the book of Revelation. That's how bad things are going to get.
Okay. Well, we're gonna have to let you go. You've said your piece, and I think that I don't think that's the most helpful personally way to look at it. But that's okay. You've had your time. Thank you for that. 503-231-8187. I don't know. I just I guess I have a knee-jerk reaction to theologizing things too much, but if that's helpful to people to look at it through that lens, that's fine. Anyway, so I thought Ella's point about acceleration on our part is a very interesting one, because they are certainly accelerating. That's the nature of what this kind of phenomenon is all about. It's a shock and awe. It's they call it a fire hose attempt. It's a attempt to make things happen so fast that people get confused, get scared, go into some kind of shock, don't respond. So we have to get ourselves in our own minds and hearts and spirits and together with each other accelerated. And there's nothing like action, I've found, to do that. I've found that I've been involved in at least two movements that accelerated in a way that no one could have foreseen. The forest protection movement here and the movement against the high-speed train in northwest Italy, where you never could have foreseen. It was just a few dozen people, and then all of a sudden it was hundreds and then thousands. So we can't be afraid. We have to do what we need to do. And as I was talking on the phone with Patrick a few days ago, in order to create the kind of community of resilience that we all wish, is a community of resistance is sometimes the best way to make that happen. So it looks like before we go back to my guests, Patrick and Valerie, Santiago, who was just mentioned by Ella, is back on the line. Go ahead, Santiago.
Good morning. I kind of wanted to bring it back around just for a moment to what Patrick was talking about earlier. He was talking about how, basically alluding to Project Paperclip. And I think it's really important because especially a lot of like liberals and Democrats missing this time that, we've been inundated with the lawsuits like Nazi apologism and or apologia, if you will. And we've also they did their best to like rehabilitate these guys because these were the people who America was supporting so long before they couldn't. So the seeds for this type of thing is not only built into the system that was created by the founding oligarchs, but also by the people who were directly supported by the capitalist class during World War II. And I really appreciate that you brought that to light, because I mean, literally had Wernher von Braun teaching kids about space travel using the same rockets that were built by Jewish hands. They said, slaves and parts went in and bodies and full rockets came out, so it's kind of sick how we disguise that. But go ahead.
Well, I said, now we got Musk and SpaceX, and he's redeemed himself after the launch fail a couple weeks ago with the rescue mission, and so he gets a good publicity for it. So it's really so perverse, it's so absolutely perverse what's going on. Anyway, have a last thought, and let's get back to Patrick and Valerie.
Okay, well, I guess the one thing that I want to point out is, because I really appreciate what the troublemakers are up to. And I think that if we're going to talk about building like a broad-based movement, we got to look to like Fred Hampton and the Rainbow Coalition, because if we're going to create a solid movement, we've got to create it around the language of class war and recognize that, that capitalism is bad, even the parts we like. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, we're being indoctrinated into drinking salt water to stay hydrated. And we need that language of class war to continue this fight. I just want to say I really appreciate what y'all do, and it's really refreshing to hear your guys' voices on here. I thank you, Paul, and thank you to Patrick and Valerie.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, Santiago. Responses of Valerie?
Oh, there's so much to say. I mean, I was thinking, part of just the design of our cities, the sort of the culture in the United States is one of separation. It's one of loneliness, of disconnection. And I feel like it feels like we're in this real uphill battle to just learn how to be together, especially at this moment in time where, the sort of institutions like faith communities are just not nearly as strong. And, and I say that knowing that there were even issues with, like, the ways, the culture that came out of, say, faith communities. But people still were connected in a way that I feel like people are just very disconnected now. And so it feels like we're, like, having to learn how to even be together in like healthy, generative ways. Like we have to learn how to be in conflict without like blowing everything up, right? So I totally agree with what Santiago just said around like needing to have like a deeper class analysis and kind of like doing that deeper work. And I also feel like it's in some ways feels like we're like, I'll just speak for troublemakers, like it's just in building the group over the last year, we started, I mean, one of my visions in starting it coming from having moved back to the United States from spending a year in Spain and Barcelona was like, I just want to have more community spaces where people who have shared values can come together and just build community and connection with each other. And so there hasn't really been like an intentional plan to do deeper outreach beyond, say, even just sort of like our, current networks. It's just pulling people in who already know each other and pulling more people in. And now more and more people are joining who have seen the actions, who've seen what's been going on, and they're like, I want to take action with people whose values align with my own. I'm sick of the Democratic Party. I don't feel like they're doing enough. I want to show up. I want to be there. And like, we're not a mutual aid group. We haven't been doing that work. And so I think there's some, in the troublemakers context, like some deeper questions around like, what are we, do we continue to, as we grow and as the needs are so much greater, like, do we start doing more mutual aid work? Because we're really a community that takes action together, a community that's like, okay, we're going to take action together and we're going to have each other's backs, like, when we do that. Well, and I personally really felt that over the last week with, the mosque attacks on me. I have had so much support from people. It's been, like, I call them my love letters. Like, I was like, so, like, oh, let me look at the phone and see, what kind of, like, love letters I've gotten, over the last day, which has just kept me going because otherwise the sort of right-wing attacks and the nasty stuff have just been pretty, pretty hard to see. So, curious to hear what Patrick has to say.
Yeah, Val actually has been a spark plug for troublemakers to have a social aspect to it. We don't just have meetings. We have like a monthly get together. What is it? Brewing together. I forgot what it's called. Brewing trouble at a pub. We're having dinner parties. I mean, it's so much of activism. Just getting together for meetings and demonstrations is not completely fulfilling. We need to have a social life together. And it's really clear. I mean, every statistic, as Val was saying, every statistic indicates we're lonelier than we used to be. We have less social life than we used to be. We have fewer close friends.
And ironic, is the perversity that I was talking about. A big reason, as we all know, is these technological tools and devices and platforms that are controlled by some of the very people who are bringing out this techno-fascist dictatorship. Yep. It's so perverse. Anyway, I just want to say, I guess, to Valerie, the idea of having the mutual aid component, I think it basically grows out of that Worth Fighting for St. John's being a community-based group, mm-hmm. as opposed to like an activist group. But yeah, people can go in different directions and include new dimensions. But I think it strongly grew out of that. And I hope, I never know what sort of effect really this just sort of talking on the air has. But if it can encourage a few people to just sort of, yes, let's do that. Just to, start something like Worth Fighting for St. John's, or just a potluck group of your neighbors or whatever. Anyway, I just hope, and I'd like to hear from people in the future talking about some of those things. I think that's really what the best use of this time on the air would be having people talk about what they're inspired to do, what they've been doing. Anyway, 503-231-8. Yeah, go ahead. I just want to say the number again. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. We got about 5 minutes left. Go ahead, Valerie.
I think it's really important what you were just saying, build on the potlucks and just the smaller things. It can feel so overwhelming to feel like, I have to do this really big thing. Like, I was raised in a way, you know, and I feel like a lot of people were raised this way in the United States of like, you know, you could be president someday. You're going to do these big, big things, you know, and it makes the small things feel inconsequential. But it's all those small things that we all do that really add up to like massive systemic change, massive change in our culture and community. And it's like now is the time. You know, we do need to be talking to people we don't agree with. You know, I saw something, and I wish I could attribute this to somebody. It's like, there are a lot of people right now losing their jobs who are going to be in, you know, really difficult positions or are going to need help. And are we on the left going to catch them right now? Or are we going to be like, I told you so, you know, if they had voted, you know, Trump or have sort of more right-wing tendencies or ideologies? And it's like, now is the time to show care, to show like we have the politics of care. We mm-hmm. care for each other. And this is the problem with the current, you know, administration on the right, is they've basically said that, you know, there is an issue with empathy is the worst problem with Western civilization. Empathy.
That's Musk that in sense. A nutshell. Yeah. That's how we grew up I should do a whole show on the character of Musk. I've been finding out. Let me just throw out a headline. Elon's grandfather, a bizarre cult and motivations that guide the mayor of Mars. This is part of a series dealing with an incredible but legit prophecy naming Elon Musk the founder of Martian civilization. It's strange, but actually true. There's some really weird, weird, dark stuff behind this character of Elon Musk that we should know. Oh, it looks like we got one last caller. Gabriel, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Great show.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, first of all, I completely disagree with the kind lady who called and made the comments about President Trump being the god or dictator. I think in the future we will see as a society that what our president and what Elon Musk is doing in our, especially in our government, is he is weeding out all the corruption and the waste.
All right. We don't have time for that. Go ahead. Bye. Sorry. Right. If you had called at the very beginning, I'd have wanted to argue with you, but we only have a couple minutes left. Sorry, Gabriel. So you're got this group, Troublemakers, and you're in trouble with the people you're making trouble about. I hope that things don't go bad. I hope that they have so many other things. Well, I don't like that they have so many other things that they're dealing with, because everything that they're dealing with is not good. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying. Let's have some final rousing thoughts for our audience about the necessity of standing up to a fascist dictatorship. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it goes without saying that, you know, you've got to put yourself on the line and realize. I mean, let's not over exaggerate that. These people have some tremendous weaknesses. They're undermining themselves. You're seeing some of these town meetings where people are showing up enraged. They're just undermining themselves. Let's look at where we can link with people, and, you know, who are ordinary people who are realizing that they've been conned by the econ and the con in chief.
Yeah, as we endure a constitutional crisis, how do we make a crisis for them? Valerie, last words.
I think that it's normal right now to feel fear, to feel immobilized, and I think it's just good to personally acknowledge that and then like step into action. I really think that joining people in your community, doing something right now, speaking up, showing people care and compassion, and kind of being creating these alternatives we've talked about, while resisting what they're trying to do to us, is absolutely critical right now. And that if anything were to happen, I think our communities as a whole, our organizing spaces, have have each other's backs. You know, I know that for sure. We are on a, and this is a long, we have a long history in this country and a long history of the world of people coming together and resisting oppression throughout history. We can do it. We've done it as human beings throughout time. And I think now there's more than ever, like, well, maybe not more than ever, but now we have, the whole world is watching. Mm-hmm. What's happening here as well. So, and I've gotten messages from people all over the world who are just like really grateful to see the, you know, the resistance, here
awesome.
In the United States.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick and Valley. Great to have you on. Maybe we'll have you on again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. And one last thought, please contact me through KBOO website, kbo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. Follow the prompts if you have anything going on in the community in Portland that you want to talk about. Thanks for running the board, Ty. I got to get out of here. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our fantastic programmers, including specials